Thank you for tuning in to Aster Investment Management's podcast series. A reminder to our listeners that a lot of the economic data and commentary is available on our smartphone app in the iOS and Android App Store. Just search Aster Research and download it today. This week, we are joined by our Chief Executive Officer, Rob Stein, Chief Investment Officer, John Eckstein, to discuss the current economic outlook in the era of COVID-19. Thank you all for joining us today.
Hello and welcome to the Aster Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I am the Chief Investment Officer of Aster Investment Management. I'm joined today by my partner, Rob Stein, the CEO of Aster. Rob, how are you?
Good, John. How are you? Everything well?
Things are good, thanks. Before we jump into today's numbers, I'd like to put a plug for next week's podcast where I'll be talking to Tim Doy of the University of Oregon, a very highly respected Fed expert, and we're going to be going through the Fed's new operating procedures. We haven't actually set down exactly a podcast time, so it's possible this could be pushed a week, but we expect next week to have me and Tim Doy talking about the future of the Fed. So
fingers crossed, John. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, Tim is super sharp. He's been one of the best Fed watchers in this new era since the sort of end of the first QE. And I learn a lot from him every week. So I'm looking forward to talking to him about the changes in the Fed stance. Hey, Rob, before we jump into the details, I usually start by giving a big picture where I see the economy sort of big picture. Why don't you take the honors this week?
So the big picture is we're bouncing back from extremely low levels in the economic data. Very hard to determine if that recent acceleration is just that. We're coming from such a far deep stagnation, recession. So I think one of the bigger things is how is this going to play out? Secondly, some of the surprising numbers, high savings rate, consumer spending increasing, housing, the tripling of lumber prices. So in a big picture, how fast are we going to bounce back from here, from the acceleration that maybe was in the cards by pure physics, and how much of that will be sustainable? And then what does it mean for 2021 or even 2022? Does inflation creep up? Are there asset classes that surprise us in their performance?
I agree with that. So from my point of view, the big picture is, are we going to slip into a more or less normal recession from this sort of bizarre suppression and then recovery event?
Right. And, you know, another big picture philosophical discussion is how does this COVID pandemic work itself out? I think a lot of people have high hopes of just a vaccine, probably less than a cure. But there's other things that could happen that make living with a pandemic more realistic. And there are things that we probably don't know about. New ways of socializing, perhaps new technology that makes it safer. There's a building in Chicago going up that is marketing itself as virus-free, from air filters to new ways of touching the elevator button. So I'm confident that a virus that we have not a cure for, but a vaccine, of a virus that allows for other technology that makes it where you can have as productive of a life as you had before. Some form of all of that is going to occur. Time frame, I don't know. But this pandemic is not the end of the way the economy will not continue what capitalism has been able to do.
Yeah, I think there will be, we should have a special podcast, honestly, on sort of speculating about the long-term effects. But you can think of, you know, half a dozen off the top of your head about how things are going to change. And, you know, like we saw in the global financial crisis, like what seems like a single sector problem sometimes you can stay in that one sector and, you know, things are just bad in Oklahoma, but sometimes it can spread throughout the whole country. So we're going to have to keep an eye on that. So payroll number today, we saw a increase, 1.4 million new jobs, of which about 400,000 were public sector jobs. The rest were private sector jobs. Unemployment rate improved substantially from 10.2% to 8.4%. That's a very large move, even these times. Rob, what's your big takeaway from the numbers?
So I continue to talk about the volatility and the inability to kind of forecast them. You sit there and you wait, and is it going to be 1.2 million, 1.4 million? Once upon a time, you know, you were off by 10 or 20,000. You were in the doghouse. So that's having its typical impact. But John, as we've discussed multiple times at the investment committee meetings and when we're together, direction matters a lot. Comparison to recent data matters a lot. And while we're going in the right direction, we're doing it at a magnitude that I think the acceleration that we look for to show if the economy is going to stay in a contraction or start to crawl out of it is giving us a little bit of an indication, a little bit of an indication that these numbers are good. At the very least, not bad. At the most, they're good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is definitely a good report. Payroll numbers way up and about as expected. Unemployment, big improvement. So one thing is,
we can't ignore where we're coming from.
Let's talk about the good news before we talk about the bad news, right?
So okay, yeah.
I'm going to say the good news is, you know, I'm ready to look at the dark side if we have to.
right.
So there's actually two different reports, two different surveys that make up the payroll report. There's the establishment survey and the household survey. And so household employment was up 3.8 million over this month versus the 1.4 in the establishment survey. So that could be, part of that is because of people having multiple jobs, maybe. It's obviously slightly different. You know, payroll counts the number of payrolls and households count the number of people working. Probably the best news, and you know I don't like to look at the unemployment rate super carefully, but the best news is that the unemployment rate improved for good reasons, not because people were dropping out of the labor force, but just because so many people got jobs. And part of that difference is due to the differences between the household survey and the establishment survey, which are the two sort of components that make up the payroll report. But the employment population ratio, the percentage of the population that has jobs, has come about halfway back from its lows, right? So in February, employment population ratio was about 61. It got as low as 51, and today it's 56.5. So we're about halfway back. So that is sort of actually that's the good news that we're halfway back, but that also sort of leads into the bad news, which is that we're only halfway back. So part of that depends on sort of how you want to see things. I think, right. Rob, you're focusing more today on sort of the change and the magnitude of the change, right?
Right. And, you know, those two surveys are starting, you know, they deviate a lot and they're starting to, you know, come back in with the story that they're telling. But John, great numbers or reviewing the numbers. I do think from where I sit, it's the time frame that they are starting to improve, clearly from bad levels. But the coronavirus statistics are still rising. Some places they're hitting their maximum levels. And so it seems, you know, schools restarted, but in some unique way, at least where I'm from in Chicago, we're doing it via Zoom. People are coming up with ideas. You would think that affects the workforce or the re-entrance into the workforce. And so my surprise and what I think is really good news is how quickly we've bounced back from some pretty extreme numbers. And you kind of made a point that you and I kind of look at the world a little differently sometimes. And I'm reminded of an anecdotal story, and I'll be brief. We were once looking at a trading operation, a trading system, if you will, and it was 50% of the time it was right, 50% of the time it was wrong. And almost at the same time, I said, wow, it's right 50% of the time, as you were saying, wow, it's wrong 50% of the time.
That's true.
So that's a little bit of our yin and yang. But the speed of which this is bouncing back, I think, is noteworthy.
I think the acceleration is definitely noteworthy. And I guess like one thing that worries me is the concept that people are now calling the core unemployment rate. And that is basically the people, which we haven't really talked about before in history, but that's the people who are saying that they're on permanent layoff, not temporary layoff. And that number continues to increase. It was about unchanged in July compared to June, but in August it's back up again, adding 500,000 people saying they're on permanent layoff. And that's only about 5% of the labor force, right? So much less than the 8% or whatever that's in the unemployment rate. But that number going up is a little worrying. Here's another nugget I got from the report. In August, 24 million people had their employment affected in some way by the pandemic, either not working or not getting as many hours as they normally get or as much pay as they normally get. And so that's a lot, 24 million people is a lot, but that's also down from 31 million in July. So that's another point in the sort of acceleration theory that we should be looking at the changes.
Right. But John, that has a lot to do with stimulus, relief programs, incentives, motivations. And we talked about in the past, many people were making more money suddenly. Savings rate is obviously through the roof. Consumer spending, it was up last month.
Yeah, let's actually go through that. That's a good segue. Okay, so we did get the personal income and spending numbers last week. So let's just go through those real quick. We had personal income up 40 basis points, 0.4% in July. That's much better than the down 1.1% in June. Personal spending up 1.9% in July. Real personal spending up 1.6%. So that's inflation adjusted. So those numbers seem small. The thing we need to convey is sort of the magnitude of the changes in the savings and expenditure rate. So personal consumption expenditures are still, you know, about 10% below where they were in January or February, and the savings rates are much high. And this is even though incomes are up overall because of the stimulus payroll, the unemployment
insurance supplement.
All right. So if you look at the difference in personal income compared from between March and July, you'll see wages down substantially, unemployment benefits and federal stimulus checks, you know, more than compensating for that. So, you know, as we said a few times, what's interesting is that even though income is up overall, private spending, consumption is down by about as much as wages are down over that period. And so that, of course, means that the savings rate has gone from, you know, fluctuating around 10% to as high as 35% a few months ago and now 17%. So what's your take on the savings and income situation, Rob?
It does. But you're seeing, you know, durable goods are up. You know, that might not be something that you would have expected, you know, purchasing from support money typically wouldn't go into durable goods. You're seeing increases in housing prices. So while I think it's how the economy has gotten into this spot, which jobs, what jobs, you know, certainly as economies accelerate and spending and income levels accelerate, you need a broad range of participation from all sorts of types of jobs. And we spoke, hotel workers are going to be impacted more than maybe lawyers and accountants. And so you're getting the type of recovery or the type of continuation of employment, perhaps from a segment of the economy that consumes more, durable goods than 90% of their money spent on just your regular household needs. And I think that takes a little while to trickle through the economy to see the stability of the economy, but I believe it would be enough of the strongest part of the employment recapture or that didn't get materially impacted by this is driving some of this accelerated growth.
Right. So you're saying kind of there's still, you know, about 37 million people are teleworking in August. And you're saying that those are the people who are sort of supporting the economy overall. And that might outweigh the number of people who have, you know, substantially lower income. So that's definitely possible. It's not clear.
At least in the beginning, right? I don't know that's sustainable, but yet well put. I like the way you succinctly said my words, but yes, that's exactly what I think.
Right.
That the parts of the economy that are the workforce that didn't get laid off or is quick to come back are overcompensating right now.
Yeah. Was there anything else you want to touch on? We could talk about the purchasing managers surveys were strong again. There's not much more we need to say about that. They were very good, both the services and the manufacturing. They're not, you know, improving the way they were, but they're staying at strong levels, which is positive. Though it's interesting that manufacturing jobs have not really come back as much as some other jobs.
No, I think it's important to touch on. I mean, lumber prices tripled in a couple of 3 months. Part of it is demand and part of it is supply. Lots of lumber mills and of such have been working at 60-70% capacity. But I am concerned that those higher prices in lumber and a variety of other products, even though it's supply chain, are going to creep inflation into the economy at some point. Not this year, maybe not next year, but I do think that's the case. And as you see, one of the things on people's minds almost day by day is what's going on with the stock market. And I know that we stay away from discussing the actual price of the stock market, based on the fact that economic fundamentals is what drives our view, and whether it goes up 10 or up 40, it's somewhat less important to us. But you're seeing some very interesting things, John. The dividend yield on stocks compared to treasuries is probably as wide as it's been. The concentration of stocks that are moving the indices, probably more concentrated than any time in the past. And so I think you're seeing people putting money into the stock market as almost a safe haven. You know, you get a higher rate of return here than there. And I don't know if that's sustainable without the acceleration even further from here. And we'll see what today's numbers do to the way we look at the world. But I think that's something that we haven't discussed, the dividend yield ratio to the interest rate on risk-free assets. And there's a lot of stock movement that can't be explained just by 1.3 million new entrants into the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have signs where volatility has been picking up the last couple of days. Again, we're recording this on Friday, the 4th. The NASDAQ is down about 9% from 2 days ago right now. Definitely some of the high flyers are going down a little bit, but we will see how sustained that is.
Right. And you know, some other uncertainty with the elections and you know, new dynamics that we all need to take into consideration as we review these numbers. And you know, what does this look like a year from now?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. The inflation, I mean, people have been anticipating an increase in volatility in the stock market coming into the election. And so we're getting some of that.
We are.
You know, I want to mention just a couple of the sort of high frequency things we look at sometimes. And those are showing, you know, maybe a little bit of stagnation, or you're looking at like the number of people like going to where they work, according to Google, like Google knows where you work, going to workplaces, sort of stagnant for July, August. If you look at the number of people going through the TSA security lines, like that is stagnant July, August. You still see steady improvement in the number of people seating at the open table, the people who have the open table reservation system. That is climbing up steadily.
And I think that high frequency data is sort of like Black Friday shopping. You know, you see the surge, people you know, running into the stores, the surge of people who are willing to eat in socially distant outside, probably going to change as the weather changes. But the leveling off of that data, I think, is what's most noteworthy. And what that means to the, you know, to the longer data we look at, you know, 3-4 months from now. I think it's going to have, it's telling us something.
What do you think it's telling us? You think it's telling us that things are going to even out, or things are going to continue to improve?
I think that it's telling us that the pace of improvement is going to slow. I do believe that the improvement is still up. But I think, you know, 1.4 million swings, 20% increases in savings and retail spending. I think that's going to level out and create another nice conversation when we get together again. Yeah. Does the stalling of numbers mean we're going back the other way? Or is it just, you know, we bounced so high, we fell so far, we're back to here based on physics. And now what does it mean? And I think that'll be the interesting fourth quarter question.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the first sort of, the question is when is the first payroll number that's more like 300,000, like a sort of normalish number, 300,000, 400,000. Do we get that? Is that going to be, you know, a year from now because we're going gangbusters all the way? Or is that, you know, in December or something that would be?
That's a great point. And, you know, my intuition is it's not going to correlate as much with the improvement or a vaccine in COVID. I don't think we get a news press release and suddenly everybody is back to work. GDP is back to, you know, 2-3%. Unemployment's back to sub 5%. I don't think you're going to see that.
I think that's a good point. Like, I think honestly, like a lot of the sort of COVID improvement is already in there, right? Like people have resumed a lot of normal activities. Like I think New York is really an outlier. New York, where I live, is an outlier where people are still not eating inside. You know, the malls just opened like yesterday. People are still scared in New York. And I think the rest of the country has already seen a big sort of, you know, getting over it more or less, you know, back to normal in a lot of dimensions, but
that's an interesting point. So I traveled for the first time. It was a quick, you know, 30-hour trip. I did go through an airport. I did go through a hotel. And I'll tell you, reality got snapped right back in my face. And I was in Colorado, in California, two places that you think have their guard down a little more. And you get used to your bubble, you know, with the three people that I'll associate with, the five people that'll come in and out of my house. And then you go out and mandatory masks on some city streets, obviously the airports, and you come home and the reality of this pandemic hits again. And I think you might get comfortable in whatever you've created as your life pattern and not realizing, wait a minute, I've created an environment that I don't feel it as much. And then you see what is actually going on. And I think as you start to reopen and people feel that it's not just the shield has been lifted, you might get more leveling out of the high frequency data at that point.
Interesting. Where were you? Where did things seem like less normal, in California or in Colorado? You said California and Colorado you were in?
Yeah, Colorado were giving tickets in the city I was in for not having masks. They were very, very strict about social distancing at restaurants. Reservations were, you know, 90 minutes. They were very strict about that. I was in a restaurant in Chicago, and the waitress was very insistent about putting the mask on as she approached the table. So there were a lot more signs in my face from when lockdown was, and you get comfortable not wearing a mask in your house, and you know, some of your relatives who may come over that you feel comfortable all of a sudden with. The reality hit as I left my bubble.
Right. Interesting.
And even more so traveling, sitting on an airplane wearing a mask and looking at the other passengers with masks. It's crude reality.
Next week, we've got some inflation numbers coming is the big news. We also have, you know, we'll have the jobless claims like we always do, the JOLTS numbers, the job openings numbers, to give us some additional color on the intricacies of the job market. And again, we hope to have Tim Doy from the University of Oregon next week talking about in depth about the Fed's new procedures. Thanks very much for joining us, everybody. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, John. Look forward to speaking with you in a few minutes.
And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state, where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.